This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know around here we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million. We got some housing, we got some inflation vocabulary, and then we got some eggs. Really? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Monday today, the 15th of August. Good as always to have you along, everybody. From the National Association of Home Builders this morning came their regular housing market index, which for the eighth straight month showed a decline in home builders' confidence, which stands to reason, right? Rising interest rates and hence higher mortgage rates and higher construction costs as well, all of which we have talked about. But hold on just a second here, because single family is but a part of the housing market. You know, an apartment building is kind of booming. More than 800,000 apartment units are figured to be under construction this year, which is a 40-year high, by the way. And that has got to mean the rent won't be too damn high forever, right? Marketplace's Matt Levin has this one.
Part of the reason developers are still building apartments? Well, there's a glut of renters who would be homeowners if a down payment in 2022 didn't require a winning Powerball ticket. Rob Dietz is chief economist with the National Association of Home Builders.
And so there's a large number of households who need a place to live who are remaining longer or seeking out the rental housing market.
That renter backlog means higher demand, higher rents, and higher returns on investment in new apartment projects. And those projects are mostly located in the places everyone seemed to move to at the peak of the pandemic, says Caitlin Shagrew-Walter with the National Multifamily Housing Council.
So Texas has a lot of new construction, other areas of the Southeast as well.
Think the suburbs of Dallas and Atlanta, and less so downtown San Francisco. But getting those apartments on the market isn't so easy. It's taking forever to find the labor and materials to finish them. Emily Hamilton researches housing at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University.
Supply chain issues, as well as the rising costs of inputs to multifamily housing, are causing multifamily buildings to be under construction for a longer time period.
And the longer and more expensive it is to build new apartments, the higher the monthly rent will go. Nationally, rents are up 12% from 2021, according to Apartment List. I'm Matt Levin for Marketplace.
On Wall Street this Monday, I guess I missed a bit of a rally last week, huh? Well, it continued today. Tell you what, we'll have the details when we do the numbers. There ain't nobody who needs to get involved in another inflation vocabulary merry-go-round, is there? We all do remember transitory, yes? Yes. That said, go ahead and climb on and pick your pony. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman has taken tickets.
According to a detailed analysis of CPI by the Atlanta Fed, there are two broad kinds of prices, flexible and sticky. Flexible prices go up and down a lot, pretty fast. Think gasoline or fresh produce, which can be impacted week to week by the cost and availability of raw materials or weather. Sticky prices change infrequently, but once they go up, they tend to stay up. Think home insurance, the phone bill, or rent, says Michael Pierce at Capital Economics.
A lot of these prices tend to be set perhaps once a year. This inflation is coming through a lot more slowly and therefore will kind of persist for longer over the next year or so.
Another sticky item, processed food and food you eat at a restaurant. Jim Hertel at Inmar Intelligence says most of the cost isn't in the ingredients, which can vary with the season and the harvest. It's non-food expenses, packaging, advertising, shipping, and labor that are likely to stay expensive for a while.
Every manufacturer, and this is just as true as somebody who's in a restaurant operation, as they are able to price up, they really don't want to give that back.
Now, the stickiest parts of CPI include some big-ticket items for consumers, like shelter and healthcare. So even though we can see flexible items like fuel getting cheaper every time we drive past a gas station, overall inflation isn't likely to come down as much or nearly as fast. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
You might have missed it over the weekend. I did, but in my defense, I was on vacation till 6 o'clock this morning. But yesterday was the 87th anniversary of the Social Security Act of 1935. And given everything, the nonpartisan group Senior Citizens League figures that beneficiaries are going to see a record high cost of living adjustment for 2023, a 9.6% increase. That's an extra $159 a month on average. But you look at a calendar. Actually, you don't have to because you can just tell 2023 is still a half a year away. And waiting for that increase while prices rise the rest of this year, that is not going to be easy for a whole lot of people. Marketplace's Savannah Marr has that one.
I first met Michael Broward in line at a food bank in downtown Albuquerque. It was just before Thanksgiving last year, and inflation was starting to cut into his monthly Social Security check.
I'm a little low on money because I'm on a fixed income, and right now bills are like, it only leaves me about $100 extra a month, so at least you're real shy on the food situation.
At the end of the line, he got a frozen turkey for his holiday meal and some staples like dried beans and peanut butter.
Here you go, sir.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. God bless you, sir.
Thanksgiving.
A few months later, at the start of 2022, Broward got a nearly 6% boost to account for inflation. I checked in with him again earlier this summer.
When we got our last cost of living, it was nice, like $140 or something like that for me. And you know, it's all gone now because of the inflation. The cost of everything has gone up to eat up every cent of that cost of living adjustment.
Broward says he's lucky that his rent hasn't increased. He's eating less meat to save on groceries, but even his go-to substitutes are getting pricier.
Eggs have gone up tremendously too, because they used to be about a dollar a dozen, maybe a dollar and a quarter, and they're now like two something a dozen, I think.
Between those higher costs and payments on a loan he just took out for some dental work?
There's no keeping up at this point.
The Social Security Administration uses a formula based on the Consumer Price Index to adjust retirees' benefits, and it does that just once a year.
In most years, that's not a problem.
Says Elaine Waxman, a senior fellow with the Urban Institute's Income and Benefits Policy Center.
Because we've typically enjoyed pretty low inflation in this country. But this is a time period that's really tested that.
Prices have increased so quickly that Waxman says retirees are feeling the lag between prices that seem to rise every day and the annual benefits adjustment. Waxman says food budgets are typically the first to be slashed.
People will often cut down on the variety, so they'll eat kind of the same small array of things. They substitute towards calorie-dense and cheaper.
Which can translate to a less healthy diet or food insecurity. Waxman says when inflation hits a certain rate, that should trigger more frequent reassessments. Economist Alicia Manel, who heads up the Center for Retirement Research at Boston College, agrees the lag can present problems in times of rapid inflation.
I think the thing to do, though, is to keep your eyes on the prize.
She says Social Security is already designed to prevent inflation from eroding retirees' budgets.
at some point, inflation will start going down and then retirees will get more than they need because it'll be a retrospective look at high inflation.
Over the course of a full inflationary cycle, she says things usually balance out.
It's too little early on and it'll be too much at the end.
But for right now, many retirees have to tighten their budgets. Michael Broward in Albuquerque says right now he's able to pay his rent. He's getting enough to eat. It's the discretionary stuff he's cutting back on.
I don't eat out. Don't go to movies. I don't see myself flying anywhere.
Or even driving many places other than church and the grocery store.
The price of gasoline has really even kept me from going up to the crest.
The crest of the Sandia Mountains that overlook Albuquerque.
And I love to go up in the mountains. And I know it's not that much money, but gosh darn it, everything. Prices of oil to change your oil. Tires are going to come up. I don't want to have to spend $150 a tire, be shocked by it, or battery.
He's being careful, because for now, there's no room in his budget for unexpected bills. In Albuquerque, I'm Savannah Marr for Marketplace.
Coming up.
It's just not realistic to think of oil and gas going away within the next 5 years.
Fact check. True. Don't at me, gang. First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials up 151 points today, 0.4%, 33,912. The NASDAQ gained 80 on the point scale, 0.6%, 13,128. The S&P 500 up 16 points, about 0.4%. 42.97. Matt Levin was telling us about apartment buildings being built. So, opening the door, if you will, on companies in that line of business, the apartment real estate firm Kendon Property Trust deposited 0.3% today. Avalon Bay Communities added 0.1%. The UK, you might have heard this morning, has approved the use of Moderna's vaccine that targets the Omicron coronavirus variant as well as the original. So Moderna shot up 3.2%. Pfizer down 0.7% today. Bonds up. Yield on the 10-year T-note, 2.79%. You're listening to Marketplace.
And now a word from our sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry. Betterment is here to help. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal, rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line, and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again. Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. The central bank leading global economic news today is not for a very welcome change, the U.S. Federal Reserve. We turn instead to the People's Bank of China, which today cut two of its key interest rates in the face of slowing growth in everything from retail sales over there to industrial production. Credit, or blame, if you will, goes to Beijing's zero COVID policy, of course. And we've told you how businesses over there are handling that. Now, though, workers. The unemployment rate in Chinese cities is about 5.5%, 5.4 technically. For people 16 to 24, though, last month, unemployment was at 20.20%. Marketplace Jennifer Pack explains what that looks like on the ground.
In late May, on day 53 of a crippling lockdown in Shanghai, some residents were allowed out of their homes for a bit, including chef Li Hongji. He and his friends brought beer and wine from home and drank on the street. Restrictions were starting to ease, but work-wise, it was too late for chef Li. The Italian restaurant he was at had shut down, and he didn't get severance pay.
In April, we were only being paid minimum wage, so I'm sure the restaurant could have survived the lockdown. But our boss, who's a foreigner, lost faith in Shanghai's future.
Further south, in the high-tech hub of Shenzhen, a coder named Nathan is trying to keep his job. He won't give us his last name because his company has not formally announced its layoffs yet.
Staff from human resources called an emergency meeting one day and started talking in vague terms that were impossible to understand. After 10 minutes of this, they made us sign a notice that said we had to reapply for our jobs.
He says 22 of them have to compete for 4 jobs. Those who didn't succeed basically had to leave. Nathan could find another job, but at 30, he says, he's considered too old for the tech industry.
For my current salary, a company could hire 2 new college graduates or someone from a top university who has worked for big tech firms.
And there are a lot of young, educated workers about. A record 10 million graduates this year. Nearly 1 in 5 can't find a job. So when computer science graduate Han Jun was offered an internship in central China's Wuhan city, he took it.
The company said it would train me, but all that meant was I would learn stuff online by myself. I left after a month. It was such a waste of time.
Han Jun suspects he was being used. See, Wuhan's government offers companies a subsidy for every new graduate they employ. Han Jun's internship was unpaid, but he says the firm told him to lie if asked.
There were people who came to inspect the company, and they asked if I had a salary and whether the firm was contributing to my Social Security insurance. I said it was. I should have admitted it wasn't. I guess the firm got the government subsidy.
Han Jun could complain, but to whom? He'd rather focus on getting a job, because the market is so hyper-competitive. The Chinese use the term involution to describe it. Here's coder Nathan again.
Involution means everybody works overtime, and even if you've finished your tasks, you still cannot leave, because the supervisor is watching you. If you leave early today, then you worry you will be given even more tasks tomorrow.
No surprise, then, that Chinese language graduate Gan Yulin is trying to delay job hunting, or at least avoid the uncertainties of the private sector.
I'm afraid of going into the workforce. I would rather stay at home and keep studying to take a postgraduate qualification or a civil service test. That way, I can avoid job hunting and interviews.
He's also thinking of joining the army. Most of the people we've spoken to have found jobs, just not ones they like or that pay well. Alexander Liu in northern China's Hebei province says he could afford to wait for the right job because he saves a lot.
For the guys like me who have graduated from college for 5 or more years, it's not quite hard for us to be unemployed for months, maybe for years.
His new job is creating content for his company's TikTok account for the UK market. He celebrated, he says, by dating.
In the past of the 28 years, I just refused my parents' invitation to date with a girl. But when I got this offer, that I was a little happier.
So he agreed to go on 2 blind dates that his parents set up. He might have gotten the job, but as for the dates, they didn't work out. In Shanghai, I'm Jennifer Pak for Marketplace.
For those who have yet to experience it, trust me when I tell you that the college application process is, well, it's no fun, and that would be a charitable way to describe it. The testing and the transcript gathering, the letters of recommendation getting, and the essay writing, just not a whole lot of fun. Some schools, though, are offering something called direct admissions. They just look at grades, sometimes test scores, and make the in-or-out decision right there. No application desired or required. Marketplace's Stephanie Hughes explains the business case.
Earlier this year, a bunch of students who hadn't even applied to Montclair State University in New Jersey got letters saying they'd been accepted. Admissions director Jordana Maziarz says sending them made her feel kind of like Willy Wonka.
There was certainly an excitement level, like a golden ticket. Ooh, you know, the school wants me.
The university took part in an experiment by a nonprofit called the Common App, On behalf of schools, it offered guaranteed admission to students who met certain criteria. All they had to do was fill out an application. Preston McGuirk with the Common App says students who received the offer were more likely to actually apply. And the biggest effects were among students historically underrepresented in higher education.
First-generation students, students who are living in lower-income zip codes, Black or African-American students, and Latinx students.
And getting more students to apply is becoming more important for schools. Again, Jordana Maziarz of Montclair State.
We're expecting a population cliff. We, you know, in order to maintain, we need to achieve a larger market share.
But getting those kids into school is only half the battle. Patrick Lorenzo is a counselor at St. Ignatius College Prep High School in San Francisco.
I would be curious to see, well, how are they being supported, helping them transition to, you know, living on campus, getting support, tutoring, etc. All these things that come with helping a student get to and through.
After all, most of the kids with golden tickets didn't make it through the chocolate factory. I'm Stephanie Hughes for Marketplace.
So, look, this is perhaps not the most popular or proper thing to say, but even with the best intentions in the world, we are going to be using oil for a while, which means we're going to have to be pulling more of it out of the ground for a while. There are basically two ways to do that. You drill vertically, straight down, with one of those oil derricks you see in the movies. That's onshore or off, by the way. Or you drill pretty much horizontally, then pump a slurry of water and sand in to hydraulically fracture the rock and force the oil out. That is fracking. Neither, of course, is great for the environment, but environmentalists especially don't like fracking. As Marketplace's Andy Euler reports, though, the oil and gas industry does seem to be betting that fracking is the better choice as we try to get to net zero carbon.
Compared to traditional drilling, almost everything about fracking is less. Less capital to get a well drilled, less time to get a well producing, and less time for it to actually produce oil. That's what oil executives have in mind when they're deciding where they're going to drill, and whether they'll do it vertically or they're going to frack. Brian Prest is an economist at the think tank Resources for the Future.
If there's going to be an energy transition and operators are considering, should I invest in a big, large-scale, long-term project or a short-term one? Well, obviously the long-term project is going to be much more exposed to risk of, you know, reduced oil demand or environmental policies than one that where you can get in and get out in a few years.
In other words, fracking is, for the most part, a lower-risk proposition. That's how Mike Eastman's been thinking lately. He's been drilling oil wells in West Texas for years. I met up with him in the parking lot of a gas station less than a mile from the Permian Basin Petroleum Museum in downtown Midland. I hop into his pickup and he takes me to a site that's getting fracked just down the road. Eastman is the CEO of a company called Tall City Exploration 3. I ask him about the production timeline on a well like this.
They all look the same.
He grabs a piece of paper and a Sharpie from the console and he sketches a quick graph.
They come on like this.
He starts with a dot high up on the vertical axis.
They kind of do this for a month.
Steady production there at the top.
And then they just go like this.
He draws a line almost straight down the page, then flattens it out near the bottom. It's what's called a decline curve, and it's how fracked wells produce over time. Jason Bordoff is co-founding dean of Columbia University's Climate School.
You put your rigs to work, you invest your capital, and most of the production you're going to get from a fracked well is going to come very early in the first couple of years of its production, and then it has a very steep decline rate.
Which means drillers got to make enough money to pay back investors in the first couple of years before production falls off a cliff. And investors want to be sure they're not only going to get their money back, but they want to make a profit too. Now that's harder to guarantee with a vertical well that's going to produce for decades with the price of oil bouncing up and down. But with a fracked well, the risk is a lot lower because the timeline is a lot shorter. Katie Hausman teaches environmental policy at the University of Michigan.
That speaks to why, along with geopolitical reasons, why we're seeing drilling increasing in the short term. But I think it's also clear that investors are worried about the long term.
Long term, like decades long, by which time we might not be using fossil fuels anymore. Gabe Eckhouse studies the political economy of oil at UC Berkeley. He says, if you follow the money, investors are leaning into short-term fracking, which means they're already planning on a transition away from oil.
The amount of capital currently flowing to oil and gas is commensurate with a net zero by 2050 transition on a global level.
The problem, he says, is for that to work, we need to invest a lot more in renewables.
So on the one hand, we are not doing anything, you know, close to what is required for a net zero transition in terms of clean energy. But at the same time, for the kind of aging oil and gas production, we're investing as if a renewable energy transition was happening.
He says the climate investment the government is making in the Inflation Reduction Act is a good start. Katie Hausman at the University of Michigan agrees, but says we've still got a long way to go. And we still have too many gasoline-powered cars and power plants running on natural gas to phase those fossil fuels out.
It's just not realistic to think of oil and gas going away within the next 5 years. And so for now, it looks like fracked wells are here to stay for the short term.
And short term in this case might be longer than we'd like. I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
Final note on the way out today. I saw this in the Wall Street Journal. Data showing that consumers are doing what incentives would dictate consumers do, which is also known as economics. More and more of us are canceling our streaming services and or dipping in and out of them. Specifically, 19% of subscribers to premium streaming services canceled three or more subscriptions in the 2 years up to this June. Yes, I know that means 81% didn't. But that is up from 6% the 2 years ended June of 2020. Speaking of which, by the way, does anybody know if Apple TV Plus has dropped all the episodes of season 3 for All Mankind yet? Asking, you know, for a friend. All right, we're going to go. Here, though, is your moment of economic context, a follow-up to the person talking about eggs in Savannah's story about inflation and Social Security. Saw this in Bloomberg today, that the egg commodity benchmark, which is, if you were unaware, as I was, it's known as Midwest Large Eggs, closed at $2.16 a dozen on Friday. That's down about 37% from the high it hit in late July. Our daily production team includes Anis Amin, Andy Corbin, Richard Cunningham, Nicholas Giang, Maria Hollenhorst, Sarah Leeson, Sean McHenry, and Daisy Palacios. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.